to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back, everyone, to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of the award-winning Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards, as we broadcast to you this evening from AM 1380 WLRM studios in Memphis, Tennessee, as we simulcast to the AM-FM affiliate stations on the Liberty News Radio Network, streaming live online as well at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com, where our broadcast archives are available to you on demand immediately upon the conclusion of each show. A great first hour, as always, with Keith Alexander co-hosting. Now joining me in studio is Bill Rowland, who will be serving as my wingman for this hour, when we welcome back to our show a man for whom we have the utmost respect. He is an author, patriot, World War II veteran, former Jeopardy grand champion, and the father of Academy Award-winning director Mel Gibson. After spending 3 years in seminary, he dedicated his life to defending the faith of our fathers. His books include Is the Pope Catholic and The Enemy Is Still Here? This gentleman last appeared on our show during the broadcast of January 9th of this year, when we discussed the manifestation of politically correct heresy in the church, as well as the secularization of the Christian faith in general. We now invite you, ladies and gentlemen, to settle into your chairs as we cover new ground in what promises to be another blockbuster interview with our friend, Hutton Gibson. Mr. Gibson, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. That's quite a spiel there. I'll have to live up to that.
Well, I'm sure you will have no trouble at all living up to that very meager introduction compared to the work that you have produced for your website, which we'll be plugging quite often during the course of this interview. We had a great time with you earlier this year. It's, in fact, in my opinion, far too much time has passed in between your visits with us, and we're glad to have you on this evening. And Bill Rowland, that being said, you were co-hosting with me when Hutton originally appeared on the show, and I'd like to turn it over to you to open up the line of questioning tonight.
Thank you, James. And it's a delight to be back on the show, as always. But, Mr. Gibson, one of the current events that's taken place recently was the overturning by the courts of Proposition 8 in California, which Proposition 8 was a referendum which banned homosexual marriages in that state. And, you know, one of my questions to you, since you are, at least for this program, our leading expert on the Catholic Church, is why was the Catholic Church, the supposedly the moral guardian and of you know, so many different issues, why was the Catholic Church silent on this issue, on Proposition 8? Was it the separation of church and state, or is there some ambiguity from the Vatican concerning this issue?
Well, you have to remember that this isn't the Catholic Church anymore. It's in the Vatican or in the local dioceses or parishes or anywhere. It's a new wrinkle, about 50 years old. And it is nothing to do with the Catholic Church. It has nothing to do with morals. It has nothing to do with responsibility. It's an organization put together to destroy the Catholic Church from within. And whatever it does not surprise me.
So, in other words, do you think the Catholic Church, as it stands today, the Vatican, has become politicized to the extent that it's no longer able to take on controversial issues like homosexuality, like some of the other moral issues that we face today? Or is it just unwilling to do so?
It's not willing to do so because half of the people there in the Vatican are queer. And they have not handled the horrible situation in the church. In fact, they have fostered it because, as I say, they are trying to destroy the church.
You know, we've seen, Bill and Hutton, this long march through the institutions as the institutions that our people founded, that Christians founded, have begun to fall and be subverted one after the other, whether it's academia, the media, government. But now, you know, Hutton, as we've said so many times on this program, as a child, I was always always maintained faith that the church would be our bedrock. That would be the one institution that would not fall to subversion. But unfortunately, that's not been the case, as you've well documented. What really precipitated this fall? And, is there any hope that you have for a reclamation of the church?
Well, it's very difficult to see any light. It came out in the open with Vatican II. It was underground for quite some time before that. We almost lost the ball in 1903. They had a horrible enemy of the church, Cardinal Rampolla, almost elected pope. But the Austrian emperor vetoed him in his capacity of Holy Roman Emperor. And next thing you know, we had a war and no more Austrian emperor. So there was nobody to veto John 23rd.
Well, that was an interesting set of circumstances. The one sovereign, the one monarch, who could have vetoed the rise of a pope or the seating of a pope, that monarchy was utterly obliterated during World War One. Interesting coincidence there.
Yeah, isn't it? Quite a coincidence.
What do you think the role, for instance, of the Freemasons and some of the other apostate or satanic elements in society have played on the church recently? We know that there's a long history of involvement of certain groups like the Masons in the Catholic Church. But what do you think their current influence is, and do they have influence over Pope Benedict?
He's one of them. He was one that influenced the last four anti-popes.
Well, you say that Benedict, do you think Benedict is a Freemason himself?
I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. Most
well, now I'm going to ask you a very controversial question. Do you think that Benedict is a homosexual, in your opinion?
I certainly do.
Oh, really?
Why else would he put up with this? He was in charge of stamping it out. And he did nothing. He just kept quiet. Keep things quiet. Don't do anything. We don't want to disturb anybody. So then when it breaks out, which it had to eventually, now he's changing his tune here, there, and everywhere. He's suddenly going to bring the mass back, and he's going to get behind the thing he always scorned before, that Fatima devotion and stuff like that. He's a slippery character. But
I think it's very interesting you say that he condoned the very thing he was supposed to stamp out in the church. What specific instances were there where he knew for a long period of time that this was going on with one particular priest or one particular church, and yet completely ignored the fact?
Well, you don't need specific instances. He was in charge of investigating these things in his congregation. It was his job since 2000. And he had 3,000 investigations during that time and a backlog of 12,000 more. And he could have dealt with the backlog if he'd just appointed a few more commissions to investigate. But while they're piling up quicker than he can get to them. And he knew all about them. He was in charge of this deal.
Don't you think that, I don't understand why, being in charge of it, he must certainly have known that there would be an outbreak of reports of these terrible instances of pedophilia and pederasty at some point. Did he really think he could cover up the situation?
That's what I've said before. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. He wants to destroy the church. He and his whole mob, they're out to kill the Catholic Church.
Mr. Gibson, what other leaders in the church do you think are responsible or are going along with Pope Benedict on this neglect or this cover-up?
It would be hard to find some that aren't.
Well, gentlemen, I hate to interject here in the midst of a riveting conversation. We do have to take a quick commercial break, but when we return, we're just getting started with Hutton Gibson this evening. Plenty more questions forthcoming about the state of the Catholic Church, and I would like to remind you that Hutton Gibson's website is a veritable encyclopedia of information that we think you should visit if you are interested in topics pertaining to traditional Catholicism. So as we head into this commercial break, let me give you the website right now, huttongibson.com. It comes with our most sincere endorsement, huttongibson.com. Check it out, and then listen to the man himself right after these words from our sponsors.
We'll be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please don't understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. The Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. Bill Rowland co-hosting with me this hour as we interview a man who, over the course of the last 7 months, has become a friend of mine, a man for whom I have the greatest respect for. He, this is a explicitly Christian radio program here, and because of that, we certainly salute those who take a traditional stand on the matters of our faith, pertaining to our faith, a man who defends the faith of our fathers, and that is certainly Hutton Gibson, probably one of the world's premier defenders of the faith of our fathers. And to learn more about his work, we encourage you again, as I mentioned just before the break, to visit his website, huttongibson.com. And that being said, I'd like to turn the interview back over to Bill as he continues on with Hutton Gibson.
Mr. Gibson, getting to a sort of a bigger overview of what's going on with the church in the United States, this country has been, many people say it was founded as a Christian nation, and yet we allow terms like Judeo-Christian to enter the vernacular to describe the United States, which is a falsehood. But certainly the Catholic Church played a role, a very strong role, in the development of Christian ideals in this country and of a very, what one would think would have been a very strong faith and a very determined Christian view of different social situations. And yet, particularly on this issue of homosexuality, it fascinates me that with Proposition 8 in California, that they've remained virtually silent. And yet, when issues such as racism or anti-Semitism come up, the Catholic Church will jump on those issues with a vengeance. What's your opinion there? What's going on with that? Why are these social issues that are not specifically prohibited by the scriptures suddenly so very important, yet homosexuality, which is an abomination, is virtually overlooked?
Well, because they have to say something once in a while, and they might as well say something that doesn't count.
That's a good point. That's right. But for instance, this term, the Judeo-Christian term, which is just a political term, it's a social term, it has nothing to do with religion. Is that term cropping up in the Catholic Church now? Do they use that term to describe different, interfaith situations such as we have in the United States? Is that a term that the Catholic Church has adopted as well?
Well, I suppose they do, but then, as I say, this new church will say anything or not say anything, depending on which side of the fence they want to hide under.
Well, what is the goal? What is the objective of the Catholic Church as it now exists? What does the Catholic Church strive to achieve in the next, let's say, 20 years?
Complete extinction.
Of itself?
Of itself, yes. The people in charge are not Catholic. They have no concept of morals. They have no concept of doctrine. They are out to serve all the great unity that's supposed to come about, a one-world government, a one-world church, probably because they found out that one world atheism wouldn't work. And that's the situation. We cannot expect anything out of that bunch in Rome or any of its affiliates that is going to benefit us.
Hutton, let me ask you this. It's been very well publicized that you attend a traditional Catholic Mass. And, you know, obviously we respect you for taking an accurate assessment of these church-related issues and speaking out on them. But certainly you can't be the only one. Is there any way, in your opinion, that those traditional Catholics who share accurate interpretations of the scriptures, who are standing up and speaking out on matters of faith like you do, is there any chance of them reaching critical mass and becoming a player in the hierarchy of the Catholic Church anymore, or is it too far gone?
Well, you have the trouble here with the apostolic succession. You can't... They changed the whole Latin Rite has had its holy orders destroyed and substituted by a brand new rite which came in officially in 1969. Oh, the gun was being jumped in 1968. So that since that time, in the Latin Rite, there are very, very few proper ordinations and almost no Episcopal consecration. So we have no bishops and very few priests, and that is what we have to depend on to keep the structure going. We can be Catholic all we want, but without a priest we can't have Mass, and they are vanishing. They just don't put them out of the seminaries anymore.
Well, you hit on something right there that certainly resonates with me, as Bill and I see here in the South all the time, in the Protestant denominations. What they are cranking out of these seminaries is in and of itself an abomination. And you're right, without strong leadership in these positions of power, whether it be a pastor at some of these Protestant churches or priests in the Catholic masses, you know, without them fulfilling their duties as good shepherds, well, obviously the congregation is going to go astray. And I don't know, Bill, I mean, your guess is as good as mine, how many Protestant churches now are still in existence that are taking strong biblical stands on some of these, let's just say, politically incorrect issues. And Hutton, you could certainly tell us, I guess, your prediction. I mean, how many Catholic churches in operation today in this country would you say are still giving the flock their biblically accurate interpretations of scriptures? How many strong Catholic churches do we have today?
Well, we have a few traditionals, but as far as the main church goes, the what passes for the Catholic Church, the official, it's way less than 1%.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I mean, Bill, what would you say on the Protestant side, percentage-wise?
Oh,
how many churches would you walk into today?
I don't know about them. I know a few Protestants, preachers and so on, that are very forward in what they have to say, politically and religiously. They're good men.
There are a few, but I tell you, certainly not to the level that there should be. And this is something that, to me, again, getting back to something I said in the previous segment, is very disconcerting, you know. Take all the secular institutions away, it's sad to see them go. But when they start infiltrating and subverting the church, then you reach crisis mode. And with that, Bill, I'll turn it back over to you.
Well, Mr. Gibson, let me ask you something. Who are your heroes? Who in the Catholic Church, among priests, laymen, leaders, whoever, which members of the church, some prominent names, are doing the right thing? Who are the reformers in the Catholic Church who are throwing themselves against this mighty hierarchy, against this mighty force, and trying to bring the Catholic Church back into its proper role?
Well, I hate to put them under fire or call attention to them. There is one, though, I will mention, but because he's dead a few years. That's Father Oswald Baker in Downham Market, Norfolk, England. And he did just what they all should have done. He stood right in his parish and said, "This is where I was put, and you're not going to get me out of here."
Hutton, please pardon the intrusion. Hate to interrupt, but we do have to take another break. Stay tuned, everybody. Bill Rowland, James Edwards continues this conversation with Hutton Gibson right after this.
If you knew Peggy Sue, then
don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Peggy Sue.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get out of this place.
Just before that last commercial break, the question was asked of Hutton Gibson, you know, some of his heroes, and he mentioned one, and that is in fact going to be my final question in just a few minutes. What can each of us do to be a hero in our daily lives? How can we be a part of the solution for the church rather than the problem? And we'll ask that of Hutton in just a moment. But first, turning it back over to Bill.
Thank you, James. Mr. Gibson, this whole, the whole involvement of homosexuals in the Catholic Church is appalling. But let me ask you something. How far back does this, this hidden cell or this secret cell of homosexuals go in the church? How long have homosexuals had this kind of influence over the Catholic Church?
I think Vatican II, at least. I was in touch with a lady who worked in Rome in one of the congregations. She was the German bishop's representative in the Congregation for the Laity. And she was in Rome 25 years, and she knew all of them. All the people, all the cardinals, all the bishops, all the monsignors, and every flunky there was. And she said that Vatican II got by with its criminal activity because every one of those people there was subject to the worst kind of blackmail.
Mm. Yep.
And she had a word for them. It sounds worse in Italian than it does in English. Vigliacchi. Cowards. And
well, that means that there was obviously such a large number of those homosexuals that they could be blackmailed. Who was doing the blackmailing? Who would have blackmailed them within the church or without the church to get certain things to allow certain things to happen that should have been condemned by the church itself?
The people who got the council together in the first place started it up, and who laid the groundwork for it. We've had a lot of this. I think a great deal of it came from that time when Joseph Stalin promulgated his idea of infiltrating the seminaries. And if you remember Bella Dodd, who testified before a House committee, that she herself had placed 1,100 communists in the Catholic seminaries. That's one woman in one country, and this was worldwide. And
that's an amazing number.
Those people would stay. Ordinarily, if you start with a class of 100, at the beginning of high school, going through to the priesthood, you're going to get 10 out of them that become priests. They'll drop out along the way for one reason or another. Some of it's scholastic, some of it's, they lose the urge, or they see a girl somewhere, or something like that. But, but these people stay there, and they use all the communist tactics. They promote each other. They break things down into small groups and discuss things. And what comes out of the discussion goes to the main thing. But That's where they bury the traditional people. They get to say something, but they're in a small group. And that group is reported by somebody who belongs to the people who called the doggone conference or council or whatever it is. And so what he says never makes the general discussion. And if it would, there are so many. See, I maintain that we have no pope, and one of the proofs of it is that we have no unity. The pope is a standard of unity. But even among the traditional people, there is no unity. So many of them can't see the point that we have no pope. The logic is gone.
Among the priests who have been accused or, in fact, have been condemned as homosexuals or child molesters or whatever their crime, what would you say their political views outside of their Catholic priesthood? What do you think their political views were? Were many of these, in fact, the leftists who came out of these seminaries who were part of this infiltration?
I think a good many of them were, yes. I would say as they came in to destroy. And the destruction sometimes includes sacrificing your own reputation. They don't care.
So do you believe that perhaps Pope Benedict's turning a blind eye to what was going on in the church was as much a part of his political belief as his own, perhaps, let's say, frailty, human frailty in terms of his sexuality? Do you think he is also, let's say, one of the hidden communists in the Catholic Church?
Well, you can't discount it. This has been going on since 1928.
That's a long time. And yet, if I'm not mistaken, the Catholic Church played a pretty significant role in bringing down the Republican government in Spain that was very much anti-religious and very much part of an anarchist and communist regime.
Right.
That seemed to be a case in point where the Catholics did, in fact, exhibit a significant amount of political influence and moral influence over a country. And that brings me to the question of what do you think of Francisco Franco in that case? Was he a hero of the Catholic Church?
He was a hero. Whether a hero to Spain or the Catholic Church, he was a hero.
And I know he also routed out and imprisoned the Masons when he could find them. He was a real enemy of the Masonic order.
Yes, in the Latin countries, they are a little more active than they are in this country. They're more focused on getting rid of the church, because the church is a greater problem there. They have such a large percentage of the people that are Catholic.
Well, I like discussing Franco, because to me, I think that he was a hero both of Spain and really of Christendom in so many ways. But what did he do in Spain, for instance, that you think would be useful in other countries in terms of, doing away with and combating some of these problems we have in both church and state?
Well, he did it by simply taking over the country.
That's all you got to do.
Of course, I don't think we have anybody of Franco's leadership in this country, or much of anywhere in the West. But certainly, he did rally the church, and the church, of course, rallied behind him in doing away with these abominations and horrors in Spain. Do you think it could come to that in this country? Do you believe that we could come to the point where the military and the church, the truly Christian church, would stand together and fight what's going on in terms of the homosexuals, in terms of the neo-Bolsheviks, in terms of the political socialism and the socialistic tendencies that are now going to drive us into bankruptcy?
Well, if they don't get together somehow and do something, we're going down the tubes.
Well, do you see, do you think that...
We have a government that's out to kill us, too. Same as the church has.
Very true. Very true. Well, okay. In the near future, Of course, some at some point, Christianity is going to have to make itself known in this country and take a stand. Do you see this happening through the traditional church, through the traditional church you belong to? Do you think that there is going to be an outcry from this church or from any church to try to stop what's going on?
Well, I don't know. The numbers are not reversed, that's sure. Because there are so few of us traditionalists left. That's one of my arguments when they say the great apostasy ends in the future. I say, well, there's not enough of us left to constitute a notice of apostasy. So we don't have any, what would you call it, a web of or a plot or anything of the sort.
Well, you know, Hutton, I think you're obviously right about that, but the one thing that I cling to, as thin as it is the fact that I think that the task facing us is no more daunting than the task that faced those who've subverted us. I think what one man can do, perhaps with the help of God, another can do, we can do. And that is something that motivates me to continue my efforts, and I'm sure yours too. I mean, I don't think that all hope is lost, as bleak as the day is. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got to take a one final break. We'll be back with a closing segment with Hutton Gibson right after these words.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life for me.
If I didn't tell him, I didn't. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the final segment of this hour. The guest that we have had featured this entire hour, including this final segment, which is now upon us, Hutton Gibson. And once again, I want to encourage all of my listeners out there to visit his exquisite website. It's very tastefully appointed, huttongibson.com. There you can read more about his missionary effort. Check out his books, which are now all available for free download. Much, much more available for you at huttongibson.com. Bill, I want to turn it over to you for a final question, and then I'll wrap it up with Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Gibson, what are your thoughts on the future of the church? What are your thoughts on the next generation coming forward, the next generation of Christians? Is the church in store for a big tribulation? Is the persecution of the church at hand? What are your thoughts on the future of Christianity in this nation and in the world?
Yes, I think we're going to get it in the neck pretty good, because people are going to differentiate between Catholics and these new people that have taken it over, and they're going to consider that all Catholics should be wiped out, understandably, when you look at those guys. So they're going to have governments grab our property. It isn't our property anymore. The new people have stolen it. We're going to have more disabilities put on us. And in general, it's not going to get any better for any of us.
I see exactly the point that you've repeated tonight, and I agree with it wholeheartedly. The entire purpose of those who have infiltrated the church is the same purpose as those who have infiltrated all of our other institutions, that is to destroy it. So they're not just mismanaging this out of ignorance. They are following a set plan to destroy the influence of the church. And unless we'd ride to the sound of the guns and stop them, that will be exactly what happens. And so that leads me to a question that I wanted to be sure to get your opinion on tonight. Undoubtedly tonight, as we have a worldwide audience, there are people tuned in this evening, traditional Catholics or Catholics who perhaps want to know how they can be a better part of the solution rather than either a part of the problem or just kind of there in neutral. To them, Hutton, what would you say? What is the prescription? How can people go to their churches this Sunday and become a proactive force, what would you tell them to do? What can they do?
Boycott the collection first.
Boycott the tithe.
The collection.
The collection.
Don't give them any money. Don't support them in any way. Say, maybe you're going to get some support when you do something for us.
That's interesting. I mean, you know, certainly that's how you would protest other institutions. Now, do you think in doing that, that would force the hand of the priest at that, individual congregation to come around and begin catering to the needs of traditionalism?
I'm not sure.
But it couldn't hurt. It's certainly more than what we're doing right now, right?
Yeah, well, of course, and there's one thing about it. They're happy to see anybody go that wants to fight.
Mr. Gibson, one question for me. Do you see the day coming when the Vatican will actually renounce Christ as the Savior and put another God in his place?
I don't know why they wouldn't, the way they're going.
Yep. That's interesting, and I'll tell you, the way they've been incrementally creeping towards this—I don't know what you want to call it—this apostasy, this multicultural, all religions are equal. That and everything else that they have been preaching for so long, I think that day could come, and it really wouldn't even raise an eyebrow, the way things are progressing. But you've given one idea that people could use that could potentially get us a favorable outcome: boycott the collection. Now, that's something we can do inside our churches. I know, obviously, you are politically active, very prominently endorsed Ron Paul in 2008, and we asked this question or a similar version of it in your previous appearance with us. This is a political talk radio program. What can our people do politically to be a part of the solution?
That's a little harder. I guess we go back to Mahatma Gandhi and simply ignore the government. How far that'll get you, I don't know, but wherever possible, keep the government out of things.
Right. Well, I mean, that's certainly a belief that we share, limited government all the way. You know, it's just a shame that, as in the church, you know, I'm looking, Hutton, and I just don't see any standard bearers out there. I mean, maybe Ron Paul was the best chance we had, but that was 2 years ago, and there's no guarantee he's going to run again, although I think trying to elect the president is a fool's errand. But nevertheless, we'll continue to be looking for heroes inside the church and outside as well. And if you see one, let me know, because far too many have passed away and they have not been replenished from the existing stock in this country and indeed around the world in present times. Let me ask you this in closing. You have, and this is what really prompted me to invite you back. Of course, you're always welcome, and we hope to have more interviews with you. It seems as though every time you're on, the hour just flies by. You have really been cranking out a lot of provocative articles on your website. I mean, really churning them out at a more frequent pace than I've noticed in the course of the past several months. When people go to your website tonight, huttongibson.com, what are they going to find there?
Well, they're going to find a book I just found recently, which was written in the 70s, apparently by a cleric. And it is a spoof. A lampoon, a satire on the new church and how it operates. And I think myself it was written by somebody who, he didn't sign it, so he can't copyright it. This is one reason I put it out on my website. I think it was Fulton Sheen did this.
Well, I'm looking at it right now, and it looks as though you've got all the chapters there, so folks can read it in its entirety, free of charge.
Right.
There at huttongibson.com, and we're about to run out of time, but what is the synopsis of the book? What's it all about?
Well, it puts the takeover of the church in such a light that almost anybody can see right through it, that it is so phony that you couldn't believe it. It lampoons it. It writes as though the man is on the wrong side trying to do the job and showing how he does it.
And, you know, I think satire is very, very powerful indeed. It can be a powerful weapon when used by our people and against our enemies. They hate to be mocked. They hate to be made fun of. That is just one of the features you'll find at HuttonGibson.com tonight. Plenty of pages and more articles to be read there for anyone interested in traditional Catholicism. We need to defend the faith of our fathers. Certainly Hutton Gibson is a champion in that regard. And again, Hutton, it's just gone by far too quickly, the hour now come and gone. But I do want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for the work that you do on behalf of our people, on behalf of our faith. And thank you for making yourself available once again to our listening audience this evening. It's a privilege and an honor to host you.
Thank you very much.
Hutton Gibson, everyone, we look forward to having you back on in the very near future. And until then, keep up the good fight and Godspeed to you, my friend.
And you too, by all means.
Ladies and gentlemen, check his website, huttongibson.com. Support his work. Spread word of his work to your friends, families, and associates. And Bill, thank you for coming on and being so well prepared for that interview. It certainly makes my job much easier when we have such talented and capable people in the all-star stable of talent with me, and you certainly came ready for action tonight, and as always, I'm most appreciative.
Well, James, you're the mule skinner on this show. We just pull the wagon when we can, but you're the driving force. And you know, I think this is an explosive interview in many respects. Certainly, some of the revelations about the Catholic Church we can will reflect upon and appreciate as Protestants, because the same thing is going on in the Protestant Church. It is being corrupted by hidden communists, by shadow homosexuals. Many of these homosexual scandals have also come out in the Protestant churches, and in some of the big televangelists, are alleged to be homosexuals and certainly act like communists.
Bill, hold it right there. Got to take our bottom of the hour break, but ladies and gentlemen, I want to remind you there is still one more hour of tonight's broadcast forthcoming, so stay tuned, and we're going to pick it up right there when we return. Lots to talk about.
Believe it or not, there's a third hour of tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.